Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, well, thankfully, somebody is on it, and I hope they've lost it. So, we usually at this time, or around this time, talk to Andrew Egger, White House correspondent for The Bulwark, and he is with us now. He is also the co-author of the Morning Shots newsletter, which you should subscribe to. Andrew joins us. How's it going, sir? Not hearing Andrew at the moment. Should we try again? Do we have him or not?
Technical difficulties. Please stand by.
I hear technical. It's weird. I hear him off in the distance, but he may be
attempting to call the St. Louis County Department of Revenue.
Well, okay. See, that's the problem.
Call me on my phone.
Oh, there he is.
All right.
Can you hear me? Am I heard? Hello. You've
never, never sounded better.
How you doing?
Yes. What a relief.
So let's.
Hey guys.
Hey, Andrew. It's good to have you on. Andrew, a St. Louis native, is with us now and every week. And so tonight is the State of the Union Address. I'm not exactly sure where to start here because it is a, well, it's, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but we are divided as a nation. And there are some Democrats who are going to opt out of the State of the Union. They're going to a separate event, and they are calling that event the People's State of the Union. There are Democrats who are going to be bringing along Jeffrey Epstein survivors. So what do you think will happen tonight, and how do you feel about some of these members opting out?
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately sort of like a long standing trend now, the sort of like gradual long breakdown of just sort of normal decorum at the State of the Union. Obviously, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that a member of Congress, for instance, heckling the president was like a major multi-day scandal. It could like define a person's political career. Now that sort of thing happens more frequently than more often than not, I guess is the way to put it. You see more of these stunts, you know, on both sides of the aisle. You've seen it in recent years. It's all a little bit theatrical, but the whole thing is a little bit theatrical, right? I mean, it's sort of like a night of political pageantry. It's a night when the whole country sort of tunes in, or at least a much greater share of the country tunes in than typically does. So it's sort of like the biggest spotlight for basically everybody involved to sort of like get some of those good visuals, get some of those good lines in. Obviously, we're going to see that from the president tonight. He's expected to talk for quite some time. He has said it's a very long speech. His speech last year was longer than any previous given State of the Union address, even though the first speech of a president's term is not technically considered a State of the Union address, so it didn't technically break the record. We'll see if he breaks that record tonight. But yes, on the Democratic side, we are expecting to see some pretty obvious displays of discontent with the way things are going right now in some of the ways that you describe.
My button was not working.
Now we can't.
Now my button is working. Everything is working now. A lot of the pre-information that's come out about the speech tonight indicates that the president's going to focus particularly on the economy. What do you expect to hear?
Well, this is the big question, right? Because the president's basic economic message got really upended, or at least it got dealt a major blow just a few days ago when the Supreme Court overturned one of the big economic tentpoles of his entire agenda of his first year back in office, which was these tariffs, these Liberation Day tariffs that he put on basically every country in the world back in April. Some of the rates have gone up, some of the rates have gone down, but the Supreme Court threw them all out just a few days ago as unconstitutional, and now the president is trying to put some of those back in place. Nobody really knows what the state of global trade is going to look like tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And so he's in this difficult place from a messaging point of view where there were already a lot of sort of affordability and economic concerns just out in the general public that his advisors had been impressing on him more and more in recent months. You really need to address people's concerns here. You really need to talk to people about the economy. It's not like the economy has been awful, but it certainly has not been sort of growing in the sort of golden age leaps and bounds that he had promised in terms of inflation coming down and jobs going up. Jobs were pretty stagnant throughout much of last year. People still have concerns about high prices, things like that. And so one thing he had been saying all along is sort of trust the process. These tariffs are going to do what I'm saying they're going to do. They're going to make us rich. They're going to make America hot. They're going to make everybody really, really happy. We just got to wait for them to work. Now it's a little harder for him to make that message because a lot of these tariffs are gone. He can't really just say, you know, blame the Supreme Court, don't blame me if things don't go well, because he's the president. You know, people ultimately see that the buck stops with him for a lot of these things. So that's the big question, is like, can he sketch out some sort of forward looking talk on the economy here, or will he mostly be dwelling on sort of these grievances against the Supreme Court and against his political enemies and these folks when it comes to the economy tonight?
With Andrew Eger here on KMOX and with the speech tonight, I imagine that people are sort of moving away from the Olympic hockey thing. And I know that people have been talking a lot about Cash Patel being there in the locker room, pounding beers and wondering how that happened or why that happened, why he was invited, and whether or not that trip was solely about that instead of there being some sort of security conference, which he says is why he was in Milan. What do you are people moving away from that? Or are they still pretty focused on what happened? And what is your opinion of it?
I mean, ultimately, it's not that important of a story in the grand scheme of things. It's a very funny story. I mean, like it's pretty transparent. Cash Patel, he's a hockey fan. He tweeted out 8 months ago or something. He's like, I'll see you guys over there in Milan. So he has been planning to go to these Olympics for quite some time. The FBI director always has to take the FBI jet when he goes anywhere. That's just standard procedure. Obviously, that costs some taxpayer money. He reimburses a little of it when he uses it for personal travel. Certainly not all the costs that are involved. That's kind of okay. I mean, the FBI director is allowed to take personal travel within reason at his discretion. Cash Patel has used it a lot more than most. I mean, there have been a lot of stories like this over the last number of months, him going to, you know, see his girlfriend, who's a country singer, perform in Nashville, now going over to sort of yuck it up with the men's hockey team over there. The weird thing about this is that, one, it's sort of an unforced error. You might expect that some people up higher in the administration would be like, hey, look, this is not a very good look for us. Maybe hold off, maybe hold back a little bit. We plainly have not seen that. There was no directive from Pam Bondi, the attorney general, to Cash Patel after those earlier news stories about his travel to say, hey, maybe cool it. Maybe don't go to Milan. Maybe don't be caught on a lot of live streams celebrating in the room. And then the other thing has been the really forcible pushback from his press office, basically calling all of this stuff fake news, saying that, you know, we can't believe you would insinuate that he's over there to watch the Olympics, when he himself tweeted that he would be over there to watch the Olympics months before any of these other supposed meetings were scheduled. And that like this is all some fake news media controversy. It's not the biggest story in the world, but it is a fair question whether this is a good use of U.S. taxpayer dollars to get the FBI director over there, to get his whole, you know, retinue and all those people over there, and just a good use of his time as a guy who's, you know, running a pretty important federal law enforcement agency. But I obviously it's not, you know, front of mind. I don't expect the president to bring it up in the speech tonight.
We are enjoying our weekly visit with Andrew Eger. He's the White House correspondent and co-author of the Morning Shots newsletter for the Bulwark. He's joining us via Zoom this morning. One of the stories, there's so many from the White House, but is the matter of this $10 billion lawsuit that Donald Trump and his kids have filed against the federal government because of what he says was the illegal releasing of his income tax information. Is this thing going to happen?
Well, that's the question, right? I mean, I think it's fair to say not just that he says it was an illegal release. I mean, the leak was not legal. I mean, it was sort of a illicit distribution of records that should have remained classified at the IRS, not just Trump's, but a number of prominent tax returns there. So it's not like he doesn't have a real beef about that. He's perfectly within his rights to be unhappy that it happened. I think what a lot of people correctly point out about this is sort of the self-dealing nature of it. I mean, the president is bringing this lawsuit against his own IRS, is going to have to, and his own Treasury Department are going to have to defend it against his lawsuit. And in theory, should make the government's best case that the government should not have to hand over this money. But as we have repeatedly seen all through the Trump administration, there is no wall of even the appearance of political separation or political independence between any of the agencies and the president himself. Not that the Treasury Department has ever been like a particularly independent agency. It's not like the Justice Department or something like that. It's there to implement the president's economic policy. But the idea that the president would be specifically seeking this money and that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, would be working really hard to prevent him from getting it. Nobody really thinks that's the way this is going to work, right? And so the basic thing you boil it down to is, doesn't this basically amount to the president just helping himself to $10 billion
of
cash from the government?
I mean, and, it's $10 billion.
And maybe it won't happen. Like it could not happen. I mean, it could. He could decide it's not worth the squeeze. He has said, oh, no, people shouldn't worry about this because, you know, I'd give it to charity, which is just it's kind of like a funny way to just be like, oh, don't worry about it. It's going to a good cause. First of all, you know, you'd have to believe that that's true. But second of all, I mean, it seems like the exact opposite of, for instance, what we were up to with Doge a year ago, where we were cutting off a lot of government monies going to NGOs and private charities because that didn't seem like a good application of taxpayer dollars. So just the idea that oh, well, you know, these Treasury dollars could be better used, you know, at a charity of Donald Trump's choice. I think a lot of people are right to be a little confused by that.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
So we also saw some testimony yesterday from an ICE official who resigned earlier in the month because his job was instructing recruits, and he is saying that the training for them is deficient, defective, and broken, and it seems like it is intentionally so. I don't imagine anything will come of this because they're already getting a ton of money and expected to get a whole lot more money from this administration. But what does this mean? What does this say when you've got this guy who's blowing the whistle on it?
Yeah, so this is a super interesting story. This is a guy who, first of all, but before this even happened, he was one of the two whistleblowers who came forward and revealed that ICE had quietly changed its policies to no longer require a judicial warrant to enter people's homes to make immigration arrests. That was a really sort of shocking revelation to a lot of people. It drove a lot of news about a month ago now. And ICE admitted after he and this other guy came forward with these whistleblower allegations, ICE admitted that it had in fact made this policy change, that it was now making these home arrests not with judicial warrants, but just with administrative warrants that an ICE agent himself would be able to sign. So a much, much, much lower bar to be able to enter homes and make arrests. So there's a certain amount of baked in credibility there. The allegation that he came forward with has already been substantiated in that way. The other piece of the puzzle here is that we are right in the middle of a real funding fight over DHS in particular. The whole federal government is funded right now, except for the Department of Homeland Security. It is still partially funded. It got a lot of money in the One Big Beautiful Bill last year. But as far as its normal sort of appropriations budget is concerned, just sort of the normal year-over-year funding, that is lapsed right now. That's been lapsed for a couple of weeks. And Democrats are digging in their heels and they're saying, look, we are not going to let you fund DHS until you put some new restraints around the way ICE is doing business right now. And it's stuff like they can't wear masks. They have to wear ID. They have to wear a clearly identifiable, you know, uniform that lets you know what agency they belong to. They can't conduct these indiscriminate sweeps. They have to sort of know who they're arresting as they're arresting them, you know, make targeted enforcement operations. It's a lot of stuff like that. They have to wear body cams, and they can't use the body cams to sort of like compile a panopticon type like list of known protesters and things like that. These are their basic asks. And Democrats think that they have enough sort of political will on their side, enough momentum here that they can actually sort of dig in a way that they didn't even during the last shutdown. So I would not necessarily agree that there will be no change along these lines. But just to get back to what you brought up originally, this is a big part of sort of the Democratic critique right now. It's not that ICE is like an illegal agency in and of itself, right? I mean, they are the body under good circumstances that is charged with enforcing a bunch of our immigration laws. That should happen. The critique is that because of the enormous swollen amount of like new money that has been given to ICE to staff up wildly, to bring in a bunch of new recruits, and specifically with this whistleblower allegation, because of the cuts that have been made to ICE training and to the amount that the sort of time and attention that's put toward bringing new agents and officers up to speed, that a lot of people are going out on the streets. This is the allegation from Democrats and from these whistleblowers, that a lot of people are going out on the streets basically just unprepared to serve in an effective and a transparent way that is respectful toward the civil rights of the people that's around them. So that's another element in all this as Democrats are trying to get some reforms to ICE in the days and weeks ahead.
Andrew, thank you. We will talk next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Andrew Egger, White House correspondent for The Bulwark, every Tuesday or every Monday usually with us, but he is with us weekly on KMOX.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.